We here are all such innovative people. So I am telling you, if you want to change the world, you're at Georgia Tech. You can do that. If you want to build the Iron Man suit, you're at Georgia Tech. You can do that. If you want to play theme music during your convocation speech like a badass, we're at Georgia Tech. We can do that. I am doing that.
And I am doing this. Well, what is this, you might ask? You might be confused. You might have stumbled across something and said, you know what? I've got a long drive today. I'm stuck in traffic. What if I check this out? I've been meaning to. I saw it, but you know, I had some time. Now I can check it out. Well, this is the podcast known as What's the Good Word. I am your host, Joshua Julian, and I am providing the one-stop shop, the open buffet, all you can eat for anything and everything related to Atlanta sports, Braves, Hawks, Falcons, Georgia Tech, because too many people cover the Dogs. We've got to cover the Jackets. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you for checking us out. Like I said, we're here for anything and everything you want about the Atlanta sports teams. This is the Hawks episode of the week. I missed last week's Hawks episode because, unfortunately, I didn't have much to talk about with the NBA playoffs starting off. I didn't want to get into the NBA draft stuff too soon because we have till, I believe, July, or, you know, right around there. So I didn't want to really bury all my stuff. I need stuff for that time period as well. So I figured we'll give the Hawks a week off after my rants, because there's only so many different ways I can say this team is at a crossroads and there really isn't much else that we can do. So instead, what's going to happen is we're going to talk about the Atlanta Hawks financial situation. And then I'm going to give a brief soliloquy, for lack of a better term. Steven will enjoy that, that SAT word. I'm going to talk about why the Hawks should not tank this offseason. And it's a very simple argument. I've seen a couple people say something about the Hawks should tank, the Hawks should tank, the Hawks should tank. I'll basically just do what all the other smart people on the internet have done, where it's like, no, it's a very simple reason why. And then I'll talk about, you know, what the team might need. We'll see. We'll see. We're kind of going to let the conversation flow. But first, salary cap talk, which is everybody's favorite. I'm going to try to not have my eyes glaze over, if you guys can promise that your eyes won't glaze over, because it's a lot of money stuff and there's a lot of finer points. I cannot pretend to be an expert on the NBA draft or the NBA salary cap. There's plenty of stuff that I do not fully understand. I'm going to explain it to you the way that I know how to explain it. So, the Atlanta Hawks have 12 players signed to the active roster next year with guaranteed money on there. One of them does have a club option, so if the Hawks wanted to, they could go down to 11. I will be honest, the club option would not help a ton. When you look at it, you know, obviously Trae Young, the biggest earner, has a $43 million cap hit, taking up about 30% of the salary cap. So he is a large chunk of it. And then the Atlanta Hawks have a lot of guys in an 18 to 12% spot, the next four. So you've got DeJounte Murray, about 25.5 million, give or take, up about 18%. Clint Capella at 22 million. DeAndre Hunter at 21.7. And then Bogdan Bogdanovic at 17.26. So when you add up the numbers, right? So Trae Young is at 30.5% of the salary cap. DeJounte Murray is at a cool 18%. Clint Capella is taking up 15.8, give or take. You've got DeAndre Hunter taking up 15.4. And then you've got Bogdan Bogdanovic taking up 12.2. That's 91%. No, 92 if you round up. 92% of the overall salary cap. The salary cap for next season is set at $141 million. That's kind of the hard cap right before you get into anything else. So the active roster by itself is at $163 million. And 91% of that salary cap, of that $141, is between those five players. Then you add in Onyeka Okongwu, who's at $14 million even for next year. That's another 9 to 10%. So your top six players are taking up all of your money. That's kind of where the Hawks don't have any money to spend. That's where that comes from. The Hawks don't have any money to spend because they're spending it all on all these players right here. And then after the $14 million, you have Jalen Johnson making $4.5 million, but he's going to be due for an extension here soon. Kobe Bufkin making $4.3 million. AJ Griffin making $3.889 million. Bruno Fernando is non-guaranteed, so you could let him waive him and you wouldn't have to pay him a cent, but it's $2.7 million. That on top of the Garrison Matthews
who has that club option at $2.23 million. If you got rid of both of those, if you waive both of those guys, you're saving yourself like $5 million total. So, you know, score. Real fine there, guys. And then Mo Guy at the bottom of the roster at $1.8 million. So that's just cap hits. That's just guaranteed money, right? Then you get into the cap holds. So these are placeholders for pending free agents, unsigned draft picks. For example, the Atlanta Hawks, currently projected for pick number 10, if the lottery were to fall as the odds are, would take up about $5.5 million, depending on various things. But there's a cap hold on that. And then you've got six current players that are going to be free agents and have cap holds currently. If the Hawks renounce their free agency rights to them, it would get taken off. But as we already established, the guaranteed salaries by themselves, the Hawks are already $22 million over the cap. But with the cap hold, Sadiq Bey has the largest at $13,670,000. He will be a restricted free agent, so the Hawks can kind of figure out what's going on there. They do have their bird rights, so they have his bird rights. They could go over the cap to sign him. You kind of question, do they want to? Sadiq was a little up and down. And then you've got cap holds on Dylan Windler and Dylan Windler, Vit Krejci, and Seth Lundy, both on the two-way contracts, could bring them back on other two-way deals. Neither of them have holds for more than $2.5 million, all the way down with Seth Lundy to $1.867 million. And then Trent Forrest and Wesley Matthews, both. Wesley Matthews is a non-bird free agent. The Hawks would have to sign him to another minimum at about $2 million. Same thing with Trent Forrest, although they do have the early bird rights, so they could go give him an offer, a percentage of a raise, I believe. We'll see what happens there. Trent Forrest is, in fact, a Quinn Snyder favorite, so there's a chance he comes back. Highly doubt that Wesley Matthews at the age of 38 comes back. So the Hawks could take up, like, help with some room kind of around, you know, around the first apron, because currently, I'm looking at SpotTrack.com, which is one of the best websites for salary cap stuff like this. So currently, their total allocations, with the active roster plus all the cap holds, you are looking at $192 million, $803,833 of total allocations, which would give the Hawks negative $51 million of salary cap space. Now, remember, there is the salary cap. It's a soft cap in the NBA. It is a very soft cap because the first luxury tax apron is where you start to have the penalties. And the luxury tax apron is set at $178 million. So with the Atlanta Hawks, obviously with all total allocations, assuming that every single player is brought back at all their cap holds, their number would be 192. That's not going to happen. You only have 14, 15 roster spots. Hawks have 12 guys on guaranteed deals, so most of those cap holds will get renounced. So if you look at it, the projected practical cap space is the negative 51. The maximum possible cap space on SpotTrack, it says this is calculated by determining all guaranteed salaries plus any dead cap from non-guaranteed salaries. All other options, cap holds, and exemptions are assumed as declined, waived, or renounced. So all those cap holds are kind of waived, so you'd get that $29 million waived. So when you go to it, the 192 minus 29, you end up at their number that they have, about 163. Their allocations up there are 167. So the Hawks do have $10 million in space below the first apron, but when you're over the cap, there's certain restrictions on who you can and can't sign, various different things like that. So the Atlanta Hawks don't have a ton of money to play with this offseason. It's been made very, very clear, right, that you probably will not have the salary cap. You will not be paying the tax. Tony Roesler has not seemed very excited about paying the tax in any way, shape, or form. So trying to work out an extension with Jalen Johnson, plus using whatever money you have right now to make the team better, there's not much of it anyway. And the Hawks do have, I will say, the Hawks have a trade exception they got from the John Collins deal. It's a $23 million trade exemption, which you can use to kind of match salary. So if you are going out to get, let's say, a $40 million player and you only want to send out DeJounte Murray or DeAndre Hunter, you can use that $23 million exemption basically as money, like a gift card is the way I've seen it described, to make up the difference in that case. So you could send DeAndre Hunter draft picks, use the trade exemption to absorb the rest of the money. That will expire on July 8th. So the Hawks kind of need to figure out what they're going to do with that. I think that you can use it to basically generate another one. There's a way to kind of like renew the, I don't know. That's a whole lot of other stuff. The Hawks have multiple other trade exemptions, but you know, it's one of those things. The Hawks used part of it to get Ty Washington in that offseason deal, but that was only $2 million, went from $25 million to $23. I think I've talked enough about the salary cap. The salary cap, basically, the outlook is not great, and there's not much the Hawks can do to get under the cap. There's not much the Hawks can do to get more space under the apron. The Hawks have kind of backed themselves into a corner. And that takes us to our second conversation on why the Hawks cannot, should not, and will not be tanking this offseason. To me, it's a very, very simple conversation, right? The Atlanta Hawks cannot, will not, and should not tank this offseason because the Hawks don't have any incentive to tank. If the Atlanta Hawks go into this offseason, right, and they decide, you know what, this core isn't going to do much, we need to move on, let's just tank. Let's just sell everybody, Trae Young and DeJounte both on the table. Clint Capella, DeAndre Hunter, sold to the highest bidder. Even Onyeka Okongwu maybe, hey, we don't really want to pay his salary, we're not 100% sure on him, somebody come take him off our hands. In that case, great, the Hawks suck, right? They don't get anything back. They're going to get draft picks, they're going to get salary relief, they might take on a bad expiring contract to make the money matched. But even if you pick up first-round picks, right, there's no reason for the Hawks to tank in that case because you're trading Trae Young to the Lakers, the Pelicans. You're trading DeJounte Murray to a team similar to that, the Spurs. The idea behind those teams picking up those players is we're trying to make our team better in the now because we're trying to win a championship. So if you trade Trae Young to the Pelicans and you get the Pelicans' first-round pick, if the Pelicans are as good as they think they're going to be with Trae Young, that pick's in the 20s. There's not much you can do rebuilding when your pick is in the 20s. So normally teams do it because they have all their first-round picks, because the ones in the 20s will be helpful, right? Maybe you find a diamond in the rough. Ideally, you're getting rotation players that you can keep around for relatively cheap contracts for the 4 or 5 years. Well, the Hawks don't have their own first-round pick next year. They don't have their first-round pick the year after that, likely. And they don't have their first-round pick the year after that. The Hawks are not going to control their own draft pick until 2028. The Spurs have two picks, I think 2025 and 2027, those are unprotected, and then 2026, they have swap rights on it. So if the Spurs are good at that time and the Hawks are not good, like if the Hawks tank, the Spurs are just going to switch picks with them. They'll get a top five pick, and the Hawks will end up with the Spurs, you know, late teens, early 20s type pick. So I've seen a couple people on the interwebs advocating for the Atlanta Hawks. The Atlanta Hawks should tank. The Atlanta Hawks need to trade off all their guys, and they each need to restart. The issue with that is, first of all, it's a horrible draft to be doing that, where the Hawks are already in 10th play, potentially the 10th pick. The odds of them rising up any higher are not great, and this is not a great draft anyway. So what are you getting at number 10 that is going to lead you into the future, right? I think the best prospect you end up with at number 10 is Matas Bouzelis, who I think has a very high ceiling, but I think his floor is equally as low. The odds of him hitting the ceiling are not the greatest, and even his ceiling isn't necessarily superstar. It's like really good third option or second option potentially. So this draft is not a great draft to be looking for a future franchise centerpiece, and this is not a great time for the Atlanta Hawks to be looking for future franchise centerpieces through the draft, because they don't have a way to get those centerpieces. If you tank right now, you win 23 games next year, and you end up with the number one pick, it's going to the Spurs. It's unprotected picks. That's kind of the biggest sin right now of the DeJounte Murray trade. It wasn't that you sent out the picks necessarily. It was that you sent out the picks with little to no, with like no protection. So there was no like, oh, well, if it doesn't work out, if the fit that is kind of questionable looking at it, if they don't adjust, we need to cover our butts. Top four protected, right? Ideally, we're not there because the whole point was we're sending it out to them. It's going to be in the 20s. So let's cover our butt if everything goes south. But they didn't do that. And that's probably why Travis Schlink ended up leaving. So that's why I have been advocating for, you know, months on this podcast to make the trades, right? The Atlanta Hawks need to make the trades. That's the only way for the Atlanta Hawks to make this team better. They've backed themselves into the corner. They've committed money to a 500 basketball team year after year. And they have not in any way, shape, or form tried to make the team better. They've tried to maintain the status quo and hope they just catch lightning in the bottle like they did in 2021. The farther away we get from 2021, ladies and gentlemen, the more that it is most definitely a one-time thing. I still think that there's plenty of opportunities to get back to that point. I think that that team was built in a certain way, and I think that, you know, there's plenty of stuff that's happened since then, but the Hawks have just continued to double down on 500 basketball, thinking, well, you know, it was this. It's at a point where it's no longer, oh, it was a different coach, or, oh, you know, Trey just needs a little bit more help. We've gotten plenty of stuff. The Hawks, it's now a roster construction issue. It's on the front office. The Hawks need to change it up. So, basically, I've pulled up a couple articles. We're going to look at some mock trades that people have put up on the interwebs, and we're going to talk about what I think, and you can provide yours as well. We're on SI.com. Jackson Caudell did one on potential Trae Young trade packages, because those are the most fun to talk about to start off. And the one that I've seen a ton of is they trade him to San Antonio for all of their picks back. So they get 2025, 2027, and the 2026 pick swap. Basically, the DeJounte Murray trade reversed. So we got DeJounte Murray for the picks, and then we send him Trae Young. So it becomes a Trae Young for DeJounte Murray straight-up trade. That is, you do that if you're also planning on trading DeJounte Murray, and you are planning on tanking. If you could get the Spurs to agree to that, the Spurs are looking for a point guard. If you get a real point guard next to Victor Wembanyama, that team could be terrifying. And Victor might be the one guy on planet Earth who is good enough on defense to make up for Trey's deficiencies by himself. Not to mention getting Trey with Greg Popovich, who knows what Pop could teach him. That would be a good situation for Trey, and if Trey were to go there, I would root for him all the way. But I would prefer to keep Trae Young. That's just me. I want to see the team get better. I think that the easiest way to do that is if you trade Trae Young, you know, you're looking for players that can help you now. And so that's what the second trade is about. The Atlanta Hawks would send Trae Young to Los Angeles, the Lakers, for Austin Reeves, Rui Hachimura, Gabe Vincent, Jalen Hood-Schifino, and three unprotected first-round picks. If the Hawks can get that package from the Lakers, I would say sign me up. Because then you're looking at a lineup where you can slide Austin Reeves into the two-guard spot. He can kind of cover all the gaps. He'll play some good defense out there, hit open shots. You can also have Rui Hachimura to play a 3-4 combo type. You can probably put him at the 3 next to Jalen Johnson, and they can just kind of, you know, roam around. It'll be interesting to see how that would work. You get a level of depth with Gabe Vincent. I would imagine he might get waived, honestly. And then Jalen Hood-Schifino is at least an interesting prospect, taken 17th overall this past year. I had mixed feelings on him in the draft process. It looked like he had a shot to be something. I just think there was a lot of work that needed to be done. So I wouldn't bank on him becoming anything other than a rotation guy, but you get two potential starters who have contributed on conference finals teams. You would be building around DeJounte Murray, but I think with the length of him, Austin Reeves, Hachimura, or DeAndre at the 3, plus Jalen and whoever you've got at center, it makes your defensive lineup much higher potential. And you still have a guy who can dribble the ball with Austin Reeves. I think Austin Reeves is a little overrated, but I think he's a solid number 3 option, because then ideally you've got DJ as your 1 or Jalen as your 1, or it's like a 1A, 1B situation. Either or, I think that that is the best Trae Young trade if you're looking to win now, right? The part about trading, if you decide that you are trading Trae Young, you kind of open up multiple avenues. Like I said, with the trading him to San Antonio to get all your picks back, that's the only way you really trade Trae Young and DeJounte Murray. You have to kind of pick one or the other. But if you decide to trade Trae, like I said, you can still build to win, or you can trade DJ as well and try to get as many picks as possible and then just kind of roll from there. But that's not easy, because then you're getting picks from teams that are potentially in the playoffs and or their future picks. So now you're just going to suck for 5 years, which is not fun. Next trade on the list, to the Orlando Magic, Trae Young goes for Jonathan Isaac, Jalen Suggs, and three unprotected first-round picks. The unprotected first-round picks are nice. The problem is it's a 2025, a 2027, and a 2029, with a core of Trae Young, Paolo Banchero, and Franz Wagner, plus Anthony Black, plus, like, I don't see those picks being anything more than, like, 15 at most. And the reason I wouldn't necessarily do this trade is you're getting two role players. I think Jalen Suggs could start. Jonathan Isaac is a terrifying bet. And I like Jonathan Isaac. He's a fantastic defender. If you could find a way to pick up Jonathan Isaac while keeping Trae Young, like if you traded DeJounte Murray and you were able to get Jonathan Isaac in the trade, that's interesting. But as with him as potentially the centerpiece here, that's horrifying because he is not, he's almost never healthy. He doesn't seem to be able to play a full NBA season. I don't think he's played any more than like 58 games in a season. And his offense is still very rough around the edges. Jalen Suggs this year has shown the ability to kind of be a 3-and-D type guy. But the reason I would go with that Lakers trade is you're getting two guys who can kind of be 3-and-D guys, plus two potential bench guys, plus draft picks, not only unprotected draft picks, but draft picks farther out. I mean, a 2031 first-round pick. Who knows what the Lakers look like then? And then the other one is they send Trae to Brooklyn or Utah for a bundle of draft picks. That's one of those trades that I kind of don't rock with, right? Because when you're looking at that, it's sort of, why would you do that if you're bringing in a bunch of picks and that's all you're getting? If they're getting Trae Young, ideally they're going to be a playoff team. You're probably not going to get a ton of value from those picks unless you bundle them all together to trade up, which is much harder than you would think. There's a DeJounte Murray mock trade from Sports Illustrated as well. Cade Kimball talking about DeJounte Murray going to the Brooklyn Nets. So as we scroll through, we're going to find the mock trade where they talk about should the Nets pick him up. DJ is one of those things, my favorite one that I keep seeing. They didn't have a framework, so I'm not going to talk about it right now. But my favorite one is when if they trade DJ and like Onyeka Okongwu, or even I would argue maybe Clint Capella, but probably Onyeka, trade them to the New Orleans Pelicans, and you bring in Brandon Ingram, Dyson Daniels. That's kind of like the main framework. I don't know if that would make the money work, depending on BI's deal and Dyson's deal. I think you might have to get the more money on the Pelican side to make it match, because Onyeka's making 14 and Dyson's still on his rookie deal. I would advocate for Jose Alvarado, but that's because that's my favorite player in the NBA. And I think the Hawks could use that kind of defensive energy. But I digress. That's my favorite general sort of mock trade, because I think that for the Pelicans, you then get DJ and CJ McCollum together would be a little too similar to Trae, but I think it would work a little bit more because DJ could be on the ball and CJ would be, he's got a wealth of experience playing off the ball. And in his older age, you probably want him to be more of a spark plug off the bench anyway. And then DJ and Zion together would be, it'd be a little bit too close to the your turn, my turn that we've seen from Trae and DJ, but Zion could become an absolute weapon on backdoor cuts, screening, rolling to the rim, you know, drive kick, Zion attacks the closeout. Both of them being shaky-ish jump shooters might hurt them, but I think it would be an interesting combo, and they're both long enough and they both go for steals. You could become a turnover machine on defense. Plus, you'd still have Herb Jones, you'd still have Jonas Valanciunas, Larry Nance. It would be a good group, and I think you get a playmaker that the Pelicans have never really had, especially in the Zion era. The Hawks, on the other hand, Brandon Ingram becomes a de facto number two. He gets a point guard for the first time in his career, so he can become more of an off-ball guy who can give you... It would allow him to become potentially the best version of himself, which is a skinnier version of Chris Middleton. And I don't think he'll provide as much on defense as Chris Middleton did at his peak, but he would provide the same offensive contributions, and I think that's what the Hawks should be aiming for in that. Plus, Dyson Daniels would be there. He is a fantastic defender. His offensive game is shaky. He came out as kind of like a big guard. I think he'd be interesting to bring in because the Hawks have, they've added a jump shot to Jalen's game. I wonder if they could add it to Dyson's game. If not, he would provide a switchable defender off the bench who can come in, run the second unit, and play very, very good defense for 25 minutes a night. If you can give him a jump shot, if he can become more of a one-on-one scorer or even more of an off-ball scorer, he's easily a starter, and him and Jalen become a ferocious switching pair. That's my favorite mock trade kind of framework right now. That's the one I'm going to be banging the table for all the time on this podcast as we get into the offseason. I don't know what we'll be able to get for DeAndre Hunter and Clint Capella. I don't know what kind of value they provide. I think DeAndre would have more value, but at the same time, I mean, he's just like a slightly more expensive or slightly cheaper Andrew Wiggins more than anything, and that's not the greatest comparison because Andrew's had one great year of production with the Warriors and then a whole bunch of uneven, up and down, inconsistent, empty stats numbers with different teams. So maybe a team thinks they can rehabilitate him. Maybe a team saw his time as a six man and thinks maybe that'll work for us. So, and then Clint, unfortunately, is starting to kind of go on the wayside. He might have to just kind of be a salary dump on a team. But we'll have plenty of time for those frameworks. I just wanted to get the general stuff out of the way, which I've talked about multiple times on this podcast. But in case you're new, you get to know. Otherwise, you get to hear it even more. So that's going to do it for today. Thank you for tuning in. If you have an opinion on who the Hawks should be trading, if you have an opinion on the trade packages I outlined, you can email me at joshuajulian26@outlook.com, or you can leave a review right under this podcast. Give it a 5-star, 4-star, 3-star. Let me know what you think. I want your Dave Meltzer wrestling opinions on my podcast. And if you're a fan of other Atlanta sports, if you're a big-time Braves fan, you know, the one team in Atlanta that gives us actual hope and follows through, or if you're a Falcons fan and you're wallowing in grief about the draft pick just like me, you can just tune into the other episodes of this podcast. Listen to me talk about those teams as well, or if you're one of the few, the proud, the many are called, few are chosen, Georgia Tech fans or alum, you can listen to the flagship show, the one that started this channel way back when. What's the Good Word? The Georgia Tech podcast about Georgia Tech athletics for Georgia Tech alum and fans by Georgia Tech alum and fans. Check all that stuff out. That's going to do it again for today. Answer the question. Tech fans know what I'm talking about. If you don't, you better learn it and learn to love it, because there's only one answer. Once you figure it out, you'll understand. What's the Good Word?